I'm going to get John to come up and read to us. She's going to read Deuteronomy and chapter 12.
These are the statutes and rules that you shall be careful to do in the land that the Lord your God of your fathers has given you to possess all the days that you live on the earth. You shall surely destroy all the places where the nations whom you shall dispossess serve their gods, on the high mountains and on the hills and under every green tree. You will tear down their altars and dash in pieces their pillars and burn their Asherim with fire. You shall chop down the carved images of their gods and destroy their name out of that place. You shall not worship the Lord your God in that way. But you shall seek the place that the Lord your God will choose out of all your tribes to put his name and make his habitation there. There you shall go, and there you will bring your burnt offering and your sacrifices, your tithes and contributions that you present, your vow offerings, your free will offerings, and the firstborn of your herd and of your flock. And there you shall eat before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household, and all that you undertake, in which the Lord your God has blessed you. You shall not do according to all that we are doing here today, everyone doing whatever is right in their own eyes. For you have not as yet come to the rest and to the inheritance that the Lord your God is giving you. But when you go over the Jordan and live in the land that your Lord your God is giving you to inherit, and when he gives you rest from all your enemies around you, so that you live in safety, then to the place that the Lord your God will choose to make his name a dwelling there you shall bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings and your sacrifices, your tithes and contribution that you will present, and all your finest vow offerings that you vow to the Lord. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God, you and your sons and your daughters, your male servants and female servants, and the Levite that is within your town, since he has no portion or inheritance with you. Take care that you do not offer your burnt offering to any place that you see, but at the place that the Lord will choose in one of your tribes. There you shall offer your burnt offerings, and there you shall do all that I am commanding you. However, you may slaughter and eat meat within any of your towns, as much as you desire, according to the blessing of the Lord your God that he has given you. The unclean and the clean may eat of it, as of the gazelle and as of the deer. Only you shall not eat the blood. You shall pour it on the earth like water. You may not eat within your towns a tithe of your grain, or of your wine, or your oil, or the firstborn of your herd, or of your flock, or any of your vow offerings that you vow, or your free will offerings, or the contribution that you present. But you shall eat them before the Lord your God in the place that the Lord your God will choose, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant and your female servant, and the Levite who is within your towns. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God in all that you undertake. Take care that you do not neglect the Levite as long as you live in your land. When the Lord your God enlarges your territory, as he has promised you, and you say, I will eat meat, because you crave meat, you may eat meat whenever you desire. If the place that the Lord your God will choose to put his name there is too far from you, then you may kill any of your herd or your flock, which the Lord has given you, as I have commanded you, and you may eat within your towns whenever you desire. Just as the gazelle or the deer is eaten, so you may eat of it. The unclean and the clean alike may eat of it. Only be sure that you do not eat the blood, for the blood is the life, and you shall not eat the life within the flesh. You shall not eat it, you shall pour it out on the earth like water. You shall not eat it, that all may go well with you and your children after you, when you do what is right in the sight of the Lord. But the holy things that are due from you, and your vow offerings, you shall take, and you shall go to the place that the Lord will choose, and offer your burnt offerings, the flesh and the blood on the altar of the Lord your God. The blood of your sacrifices shall be poured out on the altar of the Lord your God, but the flesh you may eat. Be careful to obey all these words that I command you, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, forever, when you do what is right in the sight of the Lord your God. When the Lord your God cuts off before you the nations who you will go in to dispossess, and dispossess them and dwell in their land, take care that you be not ensnared to follow them, after they have been destroyed before you, and that you do not inquire about their gods, saying, "How do these nations serve their gods?" that I may also do the same. You shall not worship the Lord your God in that way, for every abominable thing that the Lord hates they have done for their gods, for they even burn their sons and daughters in the fire to their God. Everything that I command you, you shall be careful to do. You shall not add it to it or take away from it.
Makes me smile, bless you. You must be looking at me thinking, oh, come on, Jonathan, what's exciting about this passage? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to just lead you through these words, what Moses is trying to communicate to us. And bear with me, try and stay awake and alert for those things, because I've honed this down from a good 2-hour sermon to about 40 minutes, looking at the time. Might even have to squeeze it a bit more. But I've honed this down because it's actually a rich passage. So things I tell you at the start, hold on to those, because they will become relevant throughout. A lot of unfamiliar concepts, unfamiliar ideas, but I say they're worth it. What Moses is doing at the start of this chapter, well, what he does at the very beginning, he gives us a little marker. This verse 1 in our text, you know, these are the decrees and laws you must be careful to follow in the land that the Lord, the God of your fathers, has given you to possess as long as you live in the land. Now, we'll know, because you've seen that verse now several times we've gone through. What Moses is doing is using this as like a little markers for new sections. And this is exactly what Moses is doing here from here in chapter 12, running all the way through to what I reckon is chapter 26, all the way through that. Effectively, what Moses is doing, he's given a hugely long sermon on the Ten Commandments. So he's breaking it down. You know, these first few commandments are really, first few chapters are really focused on how can we ensure that these commandments are kept. What are we going to do when we get in the land to make sure people know how to follow the commandments? So Moses is asking the question, what are we going to do to make sure that we have no other gods before our God? What are we going to do to make sure that nobody has any idols? What are we going to do to make sure that we worship only God and therefore receive all the blessings that he has promised to us? How are we going to manage that in practice? And that's what Moses is trying to communicate to the people. So in verse 2 to 4, he lays out, this is where we're going to start. What we're going to do is we're going to go into this promised land and we are going to destroy all of the worship centers, all of the temples, every worship place, every shrine, everything we find that's to do with foreign gods, every upright stick that belongs to these idols, we're going to destroy everything. As soon as you go in, that is what you're going to do. You're not going to reuse and repurpose anything. There's no taking these pagan temples and turning them into synagogues and temples and churches. This is not what we're going to do. We're going to smash them down and we're going to burn the wood. We're going to cut down the idols. We're going to wipe everything out. We're going to move right away from the pagan practices that are going on in this land. In verse 4 it tells us, you must not worship God in the way that these pagans are worshipping their God. You must not worship God in their way. And what it seems like from Moses' description, he obviously knows the land, maybe from the spies' reports, and we obviously didn't hear this detail then, but the land is obviously riddled with shrines and idols. Under every spreading tree, we're told in verse 2. It seems that everywhere there's any significant monument or plant or rise in the ground, they've dedicated some shrine or some pagan temple or some pole there for worship. Destroy the lot. Destroy everything. Israel is going to worship God in a very different way. We're not going to worship as everybody else worships. We have a very different way that we're going to worship in this land. And so it starts in verse 5 and he says, seek one place. Seek one place that God will choose. There his name will dwell. And that place, and to that place only, you must go and worship. Not under every tree, not on every hill and land and valley and rock everywhere. You're going to go to this one place that God will choose, and that is where you're going to practice your worship. Verse 6, all of your offerings, all of your sacrifices are all going to be made in that place, and that place alone. Verse 7, all of your corporate worship, when you gather together to worship God, is going to be in that one place. Verse 7, there in the presence of the Lord your God, you and your family shall eat and shall rejoice in everything you put your hand to, because the Lord your God has blessed you. One place, not like these pagans. Now, you'll remember, or maybe you won't, from Exodus, thank you Rudy for leading us through that one, that Israel had been given very detailed instructions about the tabernacle, about the tent. And Rudy spent a good amount of time going through all the details, because every thread was described, every piece of gold, every ornament, the foot of the post, the tops of the post, the ring, everything was described in immaculate detail. And what had happened is that every Israelite had contributed to the building of this tabernacle in the wilderness. And everybody was obligated, they had to give money or materials towards it. And all of those with the appropriate skills had to use their skills, taking time out to work on building this tabernacle, this central place of worship, where all these sacrifices would be made. In actual fact, what happened in the wilderness, everybody was absolutely committed to that. You remember when they left Egypt, God really blessed them, and the people in Egypt, surprisingly, considering the circumstances, gave them gold and jewelries to take with them on their journey. So they're actually fantastically rich, and they gave a substantial amount of these back to God for the building of this tabernacle and this tent. And in fact, what we read is that people freely gave far more than was required. And those that didn't have the skills to do the work still wanted to work and volunteered the time. And so we had dedicated trainers to train up those without the skills, so they would then have the skills to work on this tabernacle. It was a real community project. And in fact, what we're told in Exodus 36 is that Moses had to call a halt on all these donations because there was far too much coming in. Everybody had bought into this thing. And what happened was this tent, it went everywhere with them. It wasn't a tent, obviously it was curtains that surrounded the tent, but everything was there. This tent, this tabernacle, went with them everywhere. And what God did was, as this tent went about, God's presence lit up this place with Shekinah glory. It glowed with a bright light to show that God was in this place. And what we read about, again Rudy showed us, is that within this tent, they'd even made a seat for God to sit on within this tent. If you read it in the New King James Version, it's the mercy seat. In the NIV, it's been translated as an atonement cover. But it was there, between the cherubim, on the top of the ark. And that's where God's presence, certainly within the Israelites' mind, that's where God's presence actually was, right there in that place, in the middle of the tent. But what Moses tells us here, in this chapter, in chapter 12, is that even within the relative confines of this camp, remember they were just moving from one place to another and set up the tent at each place they went, so a fairly small camp, all fairly close together, even within the confines of this camp, in the wilderness, people didn't bother going to the tabernacle to worship. They paid all the money, they'd done all the work, and yet here this temple and this tabernacle, they just didn't bother. They didn't go there. Verse 8 of our passage, everyone was doing whatever they wanted, wherever they wanted, just doing their own thing. You're not, and Moses tells them in verse 8, you're not to do as we do here today, everyone as he sees fit, everyone doing what's right in their own mind. That's not going to carry on when we get to this promised land. Moses expands on this idea in verses 9 to 14. He says to them, when you've reached your ultimate resting place and you've settled in, then God will choose a dwelling for his name. And then every sacrifice and every offering by anyone and everyone must be carried out in this place and this place alone. Nowhere else. And that's what Moses hammers home in 9:14. But then, Moses does a strange thing. I think a significant thing, which should spark our attention and help us to read this and start to think about this a little bit more. Because what happens here, Moses changes the established law. This is the law that was given on Sinai. And remember, the Ten Commandments written in stone, you would have thought, unchangeable, mustn't be touched. Last time we looked at it was about the Sabbath day and what was going to happen there. Here, Moses changes the law. What happened was, in Leviticus 17, where that Sinai law is recorded and communicated to the people just 40 years before, in that Sinai law, what was happened was, it's in Leviticus 17, God commanded that all the domestic livestock, all the bulls and all the goats and the sheep, anything that was killed for consumption, not just like the official sacrifices for atonement, all of the sacrifices, they all had to be brought to the tabernacle and to be killed there. And the reason, we were told at the time, the reason for that is it's the idea that the blood of these animals is special. That the blood is special. The life is in the blood. And what God communicated there in Leviticus 17, that blood, that life is sacred. All life is sacred. And what happened in Leviticus 17, there is a special case made for those for wild animals that are hunted. And so in Leviticus 17, it says, you know, that if you kill a wild animal, say, if you shot it with an arrow out in the field, well, there's obviously, you weren't going to try and capture these wild animals and take them to the tabernacle, but if you shot them with an arrow, what you must do, as they were going to die away from the tabernacle, even for those wild creatures, what must happen is that the blood of that animal, the blood of that bird, had to be respected. Its life had to be respected. And so that blood was to be poured out onto the ground and was to be buried. So there was a special ceremony even for those circumstances. But what happens here now, just 40 years later, Moses, strangely, does away with that rule. As you look in verses 15 to 27. In verse 15 and 16, he tells us, you can now slaughter your domestic animals anywhere. You know, if the temple's a little bit too far away from you, you can slaughter them anywhere in the land. You don't have to come to the tabernacle anymore. But, Moses warns us, is that you must continue to treat this blood, you must continue to treat this life with respect. Just as you did with the wild animals in Leviticus 17, you've got to treat them with respect here. You've got to pour out the blood on the ground like water, just as you were told to do then. And then in verse 17 and 18, Moses makes it clear that despite this new freedom to slaughter animals at home, Moses makes it absolutely clear that the people must come to this central place of worship for the official sacrifices, for the holy sacrifices, for the special occasions. They must come. They cannot do their sacrifices at home. And what happens here in our passage, Moses gives the example of like the harvest festival. And that what, again, that everybody's going to come together and they're going to join in a special feast, rejoicing together in the presence of God at the temple. And so that when you read about throughout the rest of scripture, these people constantly traveling to Jerusalem and everyone coming to Jerusalem or going up to Jerusalem or going up for the festival, that's because of these, well, there were three festivals in Deuteronomy. By the time of Jesus' time, there were up to seven festivals that everybody had to come to the temple for to worship there. But again, what Moses does is, because he's preaching a sermon and trying to get people to understand how things are going to work out practically, there is a little problem with this new system in verse 19, and Moses wants to address that problem. He says that obviously the priests, the Levites, who had no land, the way that they ate was they were allowed to take a proportion of the sacrifices that were brought to keep for themselves, for their own food. The trouble is, you know what people are like, if they're not bringing their sacrifices, their meat and their ox and their sheep to the temple anymore, but doing it at their own home, then what would happen is the Levites would go hungry. And so Moses tells them, don't neglect the priests. Yeah, you've got this free-for-all where you can sacrifice your animals at home, but you make sure you give your proportion to the local priests. Don't neglect them. Moses again repeats this instruction, or his instruction about this sacrifice, because he wants to make it absolutely clear in verses 20 to 25. If you're craving meat, if you're desperate for some meat, you don't need to come to the temple anymore to sacrifice these idols. But the blood is sacred and it must be treated as such. And what Moses does is he closes by repeating the instructions from verses 2 to 4. Verse 31, he says, don't worship God in the pagan way. The way that they worship is detestable. They even burn their sons and daughters in the fire as sacrifices to God. This is not God's way. And finally, in verse 32, Moses finishes this chapter by repeating the instructions from the opening verse. Be careful to keep all these commands. Now, some of you, hopefully, have started to pick up that we have a chiasm here. This special literary thing, the thing that's written down in this book that the Hebrews seem to really like and Moses seems to really like. And so what you've got is you've got these markers at the end, and I say they all build up to a central point. So again, the first verse, keep the laws. The last verse, keep the laws. The second point in Moses' sermon, don't worship as the pagans are worshipping. That last point in verse 31, don't worship as the pagans are worshipping. The third point, don't do what's right in your own eyes, do what's right in God's eyes, matches that third last point. The fourth point and the fourth last point, bring your offerings to the central sanctuary. The fifth point and the fifth last point, sacred and domestic animal killing is distinguished and rules are put in place. And finally we come to the main point, right in the centre. This is verses 17 to 19. What is the main point that Moses really wants them to take home amongst all this repetition and all this talk and all these rules? Verse 17 to 19. Tithes and sacrifices, holy offerings, are only to be eaten at the chosen place. Nowhere else. Tithes, sacrifices, offerings given only at the chosen place. That's Moses' main point. Now, at the time, we can see why that might have been important to the Israelites, because they had this tabernacle and in the wilderness, and that was supposed to be the central point where they all came and worshipped and offered their animals, all of their animals, but the Israelites had messed it up. They weren't doing what God had asked them to do. Everybody was doing what's right in their own eyes, Moses says. The rules of Leviticus are supposed to deal with this problem of everybody just doing what they wanted, but it seemed as though that had just fallen by the wayside. The Israelites were just doing what they wanted. And of course, that phrase, everybody that did was right in their own eyes, or everyone did as they saw fit. For those that know your Bibles, know fine well that that's written time and time again in the book of Judges. And what we saw in the book of Judges, when everybody just does what they want and does as they see fit, it actually is really disastrous. Terrible things happen. When everybody just does what they think is best, it ends up with a real messed up world with some dreadful treatment of humanity and some dreadful debauchery, horrible things happening. So we know this is not good practice. And so what I want to do here is, if it is so important that all of the Israelites must come to this central place for all of their worship and for their sacrifices, why on earth are we not told where it is? Why are we not told where it is? If there's all this focus on this central place, why is Moses talking so much about this blood? Why has he gone into detail about this blood? Why has he changed all the focus on the blood? What's going on here? And why on earth, if it's so important to be going to this central place, why on earth does Moses relax the law on killing? Surely what we would normally do is we would double down on it. We'd give the police bigger powers and bigger fines and make sure everybody came. We'd have a few people stoned outside the camp, which I think is what Leviticus 17 says. If you don't take your animals to be slaughtered in the tabernacle, you're supposed to be killed outside the camp. Well,
Why not crack down on it? Why suddenly relax the laws? And I want to just show you, Dawn says there's a lot of repetition in this pattern. It seems like there is, but what I want to show you is just looking at these verses here. This place of the God worship must be a place that God will choose. In verse 5, we're told, you're to go and seek for the place that God will choose from among all your tribes, and he will put his name there for his dwelling. In verse 7, it says, there in the presence of the Lord your God, you and your family shall eat and rejoice. In verse 11, it's the place the Lord your God will choose as a dwelling for his name. Verse 14, offer sacrifices only at the place the Lord will choose in one of your tribes. Verse 18, in the presence of the Lord your God, at the place the Lord your God will choose. Verse 21, if the place where the Lord your God chooses to put his name is far away from you. Verse 26, the place the Lord will choose. Verse 27, present your burnt offerings on the altar of the Lord your God. The blood of your sacrifices must be poured beside the altar of the Lord your God, in the place that God chooses. So time and time and time again, this emphasis is put on. It has to be at the place of God's choosing. So the place is really important, vitally important. So why are we not told where it is? Now you might think, well, they didn't know the land. But they did know the land. We know they know the land. They'd had the details and reports from the spies. That might have been second hand. But they did know the land. If you remember, just to the last chapter, chapter 11, you'll remember that what was happened is they were given blessings and cursings that were outlined in chapters 11. And what Moses said, when we get to this new land, what's going to happen is, you're going to go up onto, or half the tribe, will go up onto Mount Gerizim, and they're going to shout the blessings from Mount Gerizim, and you're going to go up onto Mount Ebal, and you're going to shout the curses from Mount Ebal. And these two mountains, they stood with a ridge between them. In the middle of this ridge was Shechem, where Abraham first heard the promises of the Lord. They knew about these mountains. They knew about Shechem. They knew about Abraham's time in the land. They knew about the bounty of the land that was there. The land was familiar to them. They'd heard all the stories. And this place as well, we mentioned obviously about the promises to Abraham, but this place Shechem was significant throughout all the time. Shechem was the place where Joseph tended his flocks just before he went out to Egypt. He would later buy some property there, land there, and he would dig a well to water his flocks. It's the town where Sychar would be built. And in chapters 27 of Deuteronomy, what God does is he instructs a place of worship to be built on Mount Ebal. What God does in chapter 27, he says, you're going to build an altar of uncut stones. But this altar is going to be surrounded by stone walls. And on these stone walls, they're going to be plastered. And then in the plaster, you're going to inscribe all the words of the law. That's what's going to happen on Mount Ebal. And in fact, the archaeologists have been up there, and you can actually go and see the remains of the altar and the remains of the walls in a place called Nablus in the West Bank in Israel. So you can go and see that place. And so I ask the question first then, is this the place then that God has chosen? He tells them to build the altar there. That's where the worship's going to be focused. They can be worshipping no other place apart from the place that God's chosen. He says build the altar there. So is that the place? No. No. When we think back to chapter 11 and verse 29, what was shouted from Mount Ebal? What do you think, if that's the place where the altar of God is placed, what do you think is shouted from Mount Ebal? I would have thought the blessings. But no, that's not what's shouted from Mount Ebal. The place where the law was inscribed in the plastered walls was on the mountain where the curses are shouted from. Now that doesn't make sense. It'll make sense a little bit later on to us, but that doesn't make sense. And it's interesting to note that the Samaritans, do you remember in John 4 where Jesus met with a Samaritan woman by the well? We did mention it last time, but you might not remember it. Jesus sits down, meets with a Samaritan woman at the well. It's Jacob's well, and he has a conversation with her, and she comes back with a question. She said, you know, where should we be worshipping? Should we be worshipping the Jews, say, or should we be worshipping here on this mountain? And what happened is this mountain that they sat on is Gerizim, on the other side of the valley from Ebal. And the Samaritans obviously thought a mistake had been made. they added a few extra chapters to the book of Deuteronomy to make Gerizim the right place, because they said, surely, if this is God's temple and the place we should be worshipping, it should be under the mountain of blessing, Gerizim. That's where all the blessings were shouted from. And so the Samaritans said, this is our mountain where we will worship. But the thing is, it wasn't Gerizim, and it's not evil where this altar was built. They were not the place that God was looking forward to. And when we get to through to Samuel, and thank you for Seb for taking us to that book, in 1 Samuel 1 verse 3, what we're told there is that Shiloh was the central place of worship, where everyone went to worship and sacrifice to the Lord Almighty. Now, is that the place then where everybody needs to worship and everybody needs to come together? Is it at Shiloh? Was that the place that God had chosen? No. As we've already heard through Seb's messages, there's something wrong. The place was just wrapped with a corrupt and a weak priesthood. It was polluted with unholy fire. Shiloh would not last. So what are the temple in? This temple in the city of Jerusalem. Because surely everybody knows that that must be the place. That must be the place that God has chosen. And certainly it looks that way. Certainly all of the Jews believe that to the bottom of their heart, that this must be it. Now we can get some clues and some of the things they've picked up on. So in verse 9 of our passage, we were told that the true temple would not be established until you have reached the resting place and the inheritance the Lord your God has given you. So Mount Ebal was when they first entered the land and the altar was built there. That was a place of cursing. That wasn't the place, but they didn't have rest in the land. Shiloh was the next place, but they still didn't have rest in the land. But what happened was when David sat down, this is in 2 Samuel 7 verse 1, David sits down, finally, all of his enemies are defeated, and there is rest in the land. All the enemies are gone. David is enjoying living in his palace of cedar, and he thinks, now is the time. Now is the time. We must now be looking for a place to build this place of worship, this central place of worship. And it certainly looks that way, because Nathan turns round to David when he says this, and he says, whatever you've got in mind, go ahead, do it. The Lord is with you. Whatever you want to do. Jerusalem, it's fine. And it seems as though it's the right place. Because in verse 13 of 2 Samuel 7, God says, this temple will be a house for his name, just as Moses told us here in verse 11 and 21 of our passage. And it seems to be the right place. Because when we get to 1 Kings 9 and verse 3, God speaks to Solomon. And he says to Solomon, I have consecrated this temple which you have built by putting my name there forever. My eyes and my heart will always be there. And God also even consecrates the first sacrifices that are made there and fills the place. Because when we get to 2 Chronicles 7 verses 1 and 2, what we find is that when Solomon finishes praying, fire comes down from heaven, consumes the burnt offering and the sacrifices, and the glory of the Lord fills the temple. And the priests could not enter the temple of the Lord because the glory of God filled it. That was in 2 Chronicles 7. And it seems as though everything's right there. But even Jerusalem's temple is not the ultimate place that God has chosen to put his name for him to dwell. God told David in 2 Samuel 7, verses 5 and 7, are you the one to build a house for me? Did I ever ask for a house of cedar to be built? And Solomon, the one who actually built the temple, 1 Kings 8, 27, he acknowledges the foolishness of this, because he says, but will God really dwell on earth? The heavens, even the highest heavens, cannot contain you. How much less this temple that I have built? The problem is that despite the peace in David and Solomon's time, what we're told in Hebrews 3 and 4 is that they still have not entered the rest that God was really promising. When that rest comes, then he will establish a place where his name will be. And all the clues in our passage as to where this real place is. This place where the sacrifices should be made. And what we see is that the ultimate sacrifice was not made in the temple at Ebal. Ebal was curses and was made under the law. You couldn't come to God through the law. The ultimate sacrifice was not made at Shiloh. The earthly priestly system is just too flawed. The ultimate sacrifice was not even made in the temple at Jerusalem. The lifeblood of the ultimate sacrifice was to be poured out like water on the ground, like blood and water. It would be buried, but it would be at a distance, some way from the altar. The God's place of choosing was Golgotha, was Calvary. The sacrifice was Jesus Christ. And this is where God would build his house, where his name would dwell, on the rock of Calvary. And he would build his house with living stones. You and I, we are the living stones, the sacrifices made on that altar. We are the temples, the house of God, wherein he lives, where his spirit lives. Ultimately, it's not Jerusalem, but the new Jerusalem, which God has prepared, not a temple built by human hands. And there God will dwell with his people forever. That's what we're looking forward to. That's what Moses saw in this passage. Amen. Amen.